Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community.
This week, I am so encouraged and excited to introduce you to Aaron Smith, the director of Seattle Public School District Food Service Department. Aaron, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Your district has been doing a lot during this COVID pandemic, and you started kind of right in the beginning of COVID. I think you've been at your district for maybe half a year before the pandemic really hit and students got sent home.
Actually, I started like January of last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. Yeah, so you've been on a roller coaster ride coming into a large district and then trying to retool everything in the midst of this crisis. Can you tell us a little bit about how your district is serving students right now?
We have a ton of different delivery methods. We have 40 sites open every day for meals. We have 38 buses delivering. And rotating the city for meal pickups. We also have an awesome partnership with Amazon that's delivering to over 5,000 students a day, home delivery, direct to door. We also have our central kitchen that's delivering directly to our partnership with the city of Seattle to shelters and their housing complex. So we try our best to kind of cover a large city with limited resources right now. And it's really challenging for a lot of families to make it to the meal sites.
I'm sure the logistics and trying to coordinate all that's it's mind boggling. I do not envy you one bit with that. So is your district doing all remote? Is it a hybrid model? What capacity are students learning right now?
Right now, it's 100% remote. They just voted on doing some type of hybrid reentry for kindergarten through first grade starting March 1st. But they're still going through negotiations with, you know, the teachers and the unions. But so right now, we're getting geared up on adding another delivery model to what we're currently doing.
Right. Wow. Tell me a little bit about your partnership with Amazon. How did that get started? How are you coordinating deliveries? If you could share a little insight on that, I'm sure some of our listeners are really interested in hearing how that relationship works.
Yes, Amazon actually reached out to us to figure out how can they help provide a service to reach the students that's highest in need, might not be able to pick up meals. So we initially started off delivering just to SPED students. And then we eventually kind of reached out to the FRL and low-income students and slowly grew the program from there. So we actually started off with maybe 200, now we have 5,000. And we add about 500 students a week to the program. We're using their flex drivers. So it's actually a really cool program. All the meals is packaged at our central kitchen. Then we send it out to like one of our biggest middle schools. And it gets there at the loading dock every morning at 8 o'clock. Once it gets there, our kitchen staff ping the Amazon drivers for time for them to pick up. They automatically get on their app the list of addresses, how many boxes to pick up, and where to deliver it every morning.
Wow, that's a massive undertaking on its own, not to mention your pickup sites and your bus delivery. What do your meal packages look like right now? Are you doing breakfast, lunch, just lunch, breakfast, lunch, next up? Like what model are you all using?
It depends on the delivery. So some of them, some is just, so for like Amazon, we're doing like breakfast and lunch. Sometimes we do produce boxes as well. The meal sites, we do breakfast, lunch, and supper program because we have different partnerships with Fair Starts and other organizations that provide a extra supper meal. And then I partner with the city. They do breakfast, lunch, and snack. So each delivery is a different combination.
Yeah. How many employees approximately do you guys have working for you there in Seattle Public?
Right now
in the food service.
Right now during COVID, we're down to 130, 140 employees.
Wow, that's not a lot of people to get a lot of meals out every day.
No, it's not. We start at 4 in the morning. Start 4 in the morning. We have two shifts in our central kitchen. Each shift is responsible for producing at least 20,000 meals to get shipped out for the next day.
So. Wow. Man, I like I said earlier, that is mind-boggling, and I don't envy your position at all right now.
It's been fun. It's been, you know, just team. We're really creative, and we're quick to like pivot and come up with a new supply chain or a new delivery method or just the way we developed the menu over this time. It's really been fun. It's been tired, but it's been fun.
So as those changes have to occur, what's been one of the best models you all have used to communicate with your employees as well as your stakeholders and participants on modifications that you've had to make to the model? I'm sure it's been something in flux. You mentioned pivoting numerous times. So how are you communicating that out with folks?
Actually, like, so when we first, COVID first started, we immediately set up meetings with all of our different community partners, parent groups, and just got to understand, like, but what's the best way? What are they expecting from us? And that led to us creating a communication plans with our comms department. So every time there is a change, we have the Seattle Public Schools Communication Department have a protocol how they send it out through social media, robocalls, email blasts. And we also alert all of our community partners so they can share it through their channels.
That's awesome. How has the staff been communicated with when you have to change a process or I don't know what your supply chains look like, but I know from others I've talked to, you're expecting product A to come in and it doesn't. So you have to scramble and look for product B to be able to get meals out. How's your staff responded to that and how have they been communicated with?
We had some issues in the beginning, just trying to figure out the best way of doing it. The good thing for us, we still have 5 field supervisors and they're only managing 40 sites versus 120 or 118. You know, so it's easier for them to get around and get to all their school sites right now. So we send out communications through the keepers because each site gets deliveries every day from Central Kitchen. So we send letters out that way. We also email them and supervisors call all of the on-site managers and let them know if any changes and updates.
Awesome, awesome. Kind of circling back to procurement, what challenges have you all experienced early on? Have they gotten better over time? You know, has it been food? Has it been packaging? Has it been all of the above?
All of the above. We've been really having some serious food issues. you know, a cycle menu. We're really not a big fan of cycle menus, but that's just been thrown out the door. We go from month to month on what's available. And we try to order as far in advance as possible. But because of the procurement issues, it really opened the door for us to do more scratch cooking. Because, you know, there's been a few times we had to run out to like cash and carry, you know, and then just buy out all their chicken. You know, keep the menu going. Procurement, supply chain, inventory has really been a mixed bag from month to month. So, I mean, it does change a lot. But we kind of got a handle on what to expect at this time. But in the beginning, it was rough. It was rough. Right. And staff wasn't happy about it.
Oh, I'm sure. It really changes their day drastically every time they have to switch gears due to a delivery fiasco. So with you transition to be able to do more scratch cooking, I understand you guys have brought on a new chef in the last year or so. Can you tell me a little bit about what that process was like? I know that there's districts out there that are considering bringing in on a chef and would love to learn from your best practices on what the process was like, what you were looking for in a chef and how that chef's adapted to the child nutrition environment.
So when I got here, you know, there was a dietitian on staff. So what I did, I really went out and I met with community partners, all the different organizations, all the groups to, you know, get a feel on their perception of the nutrition services, on the type of food we're providing the quality of it, the variety. And the biggest thing was the community felt like we weren't embracing or wasn't listening to the different cultures. It's this super diverse city.
Yeah, I was going to say, I grew up in the Seattle area, and it's one of the most diverse cities I've ever been in. So reaching all those different various palates, needs, cultural, reaching all the different cultures and making it that it's appropriate to their palates has probably been a challenge.
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge. Like one of our schools, Seattle World School, they have 30 different translators at that school. I mean, wow. It is, it's amazing and challenging at the same time. And I initially tried to pick up that task myself and, implement the soup bar, but it was successful, but it also took a lot of work. And so that's where I came to the conclusion. I need to bring on a chef. I need to bring somebody else on to help me, kind of come up with more international type dishes, a way to implement things that people may think is impossible in this field, make it possible, that's just how the process started. And the main thing I looked for when I hired a chef was their knowledge of different types of food, their knowledge of different type of international, and knowledge of different cultures. That was the biggest thing I was looking for.
Yeah. I can only imagine, a school with 30 different translators trying to produce meals that resonate with all those different students has got to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And you're a chef as well. So you came from, the culinary field into this director role. What's it been like collaborating and having to step back from your chef role and have another chef run, the kitchen? What's that been like for you?
It wasn't easy, but Emmy Collins is our district chef, and she had no problem kicking me out the kitchen. When I tried to go in. But I started off as a district chef up in Rockford for Rockford Public Schools.
Okay, Rockford. Where's that at? Sorry,
Illinois.
Illinois. Yeah. Okay,
and just worked my way up, to assistant director for Hampton County, Tennessee, up to the director role here in Seattle. And so it was easy for me to help Emmy out coming from the restaurants and knowing the challenges and understanding the regs and how it works. Because when I came in, it was just me. I was just figuring it out on my own.
Right.
So it really took her. She started, September? This past September, right before COVID, so September of last year. And September of 19, September of 19, losing track of years. We in 21.
Yeah,
now.
No, okay. September.
Yeah,
yeah.
19.
Did 2020 even exist? Let's be honest.
I started, like I said, January 19, brought her on board in September, and took her, a while just to learn. I still really oversaw the food side of things. She got a feel for my expectations on the quality, the type of food, the direction that we want to go in. And now she's just taking over that 100% and putting some amazing things on the menu. Stuff I never would have even thought of, like a smoked salmon chowder in a bread bowl. She's also, able to help build relationships with indigenous farms and local farmers. And also really doing a good job on the procurement side of getting us just the best prices to make this stuff affordable. So it's a blessing to have somebody to do that. It's also heartbreaking that that was the only fun part of this job. So,
No, I hear you. So what kind of training did Chef Collins need to acclimate to the child nutrition field when you brought her on board?
Actually, we did things in reverse. I didn't go through the standard school nutrition training and understanding the sodium. I didn't want her to think about that at all. I wanted her to just be 100% creative, understand the different cultures we work with in the city, come up with whatever menu ideas you have. And then I would teach you the regs on the backside, because my fear was if I threw all these regs at her in the beginning, it would put restraints on her creativity. And then she would say, I can't do this. No, be as creative as possible. And then let's figure out how to make it work in regs. Don't think about the regs first and then try to get creative. So yeah, we just went about it in a different way.
That's awesome. That's a really, really unique strategy. And one that I hadn't considered before, thinking, oh, we need to learn the field and then you can apply that. But I really love that flipping in reverse and identifying what can be done and then how to adapt it to the mm-hmm. rest. That's brilliant. So had she come from the restaurant field before she came in, or did she come from catering, hotels, university? What was her background?
She was born in Brazil. She had her own restaurant here in Seattle, a Brazilian restaurant. She also had her own private catering business. She had a wide background of the restaurant industry. I can't think of the culinary school she went to. and, you know, she's also been on a couple of TV shows like Cutthroat Kitchen and something else. But, you know, so she understand, you know, so she had that personality she, I thought, you know, bring to the table, that good marketing. You know, I don't want to be the face of anything. I don't like looking at my own face. You know, I want her face to be out there. You know, so having all these different skill sets of the marketing, the TV personality, as well as knowing how to run your own restaurant, as well as being a private chef, just made her a really good fit for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. How did the staff adapt to having a chef that didn't have a background in child nutrition come in and start leading food production?
They wasn't happy about it. They was mad because they always had a dietitian. Mm-hmm. And so by going in a different direction with a chef overseeing the menu, Seattle's very health conscious, you know. Yeah. And coming from Chicago, where it's, you know, you get a lot of grease, a lot of fried food, and then the South where you get the barbecue and the grilling, yeah, to Seattle where you the baked salmon, you know, it was a little bit different. So it took them time to adjust. It took them time to adjust, but now that they see the creativity, you know, they love it. But, and there's other things where they're a little bit upset, you know, 'cause we just did a department restructuring and added some positions and modified others. And so it just took them a while, 'cause it's been ran a certain way for so long and change is difficult.
Right. Yeah. Change is one of the most difficult things for people. And, but I think your methodology of bringing in and showing that level of creativity and showing what's possible probably helped them adapt to, moving in a new direction. All right. So yeah, what were some of those strategies you were mentioning? Your central kitchen staff was your primary focus on getting them up to speed. And there were some equipment challenges. Did you guys put together any training programs specific for your central kitchen staff? You bring in additional culinary experts. What all steps did you all take to get them up to speed with where you wanted them?
Again, we do things a little bit different. So we have a catering, you know, we do catering and it's pretty big, and catering is actually 100% scratch. And so what we did was we really start cross training our central kitchen staff with the catering team. So they get familiar with cooking that way. And so we really focus more on catering. And so that's, you know, fast forward a year later, now that's how we able to do more scratch cooking in the central kitchen, because they got used to doing some of that through the catering department.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. That cross utilization of staff and getting them cross trained a great way to help different areas of the department learn what the other areas do and create more collaboration, but also get your folks up to speed on
and it gave us more hands-on one-on-one training versus large group, and some people may get it, some people might not get it. You know, we tried that. We brought in some chefs like Chef Ken and other organizations to do some training, and it really wasn't clicking with some people. By having rotating through the catering department on how we're cooking and what we're producing, got more buy-in. They understood better what we were trying to accomplish.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I mean, adult learners learn in all sorts of different modalities. So making sure that you're reaching your staff and getting them the training that they need in a method that's going to resonate with them is huge.
So our goal now, so our goal now is really turning that central kitchen into like a production kitchen.
Okay.
And for the future, the school sites will have the ability to customize their menu. And they're ordering, you know, whatever the chicken, the type of sauce they want, you know, the ingredients, and then they can complete it and finish it at the school site.
Wow. What are some of the recipes that your team's been producing that has resonated well with the community, specifically with some of your ethnic community members?
We did a Somali stew. That was like one of our biggest hits was a Somali stew. Right now we have a Chinese dumpling soup where we're using edamame dumplings with like a lemongrass broth. So that's really reaching a lot to the Asian community.
Yeah.
We did a Haitian lentil dish. It's do a lot of different things. What's coming up for Black History Month, we're doing like a chicken and seafood gumbo, also with maybe like a Creole salmon with red beans and rice. Try to go with like the Mardi Gras thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I know earlier in the conversation, we were talking about you meeting with different community stakeholders. How did you get those stakeholders to engage, or were they knocking down the door wanting to engage?
No, they was actually surprised that we reached out. It's like nobody's ever, you know, from Nutrition Services reached out and wanted to hear from, you know, the communities or just gave them a platform. So we can get a better understanding of, you know, why they eat or why they don't eat with us.
Right.
And a lot of times in these groups, you always have to have a translator, you know, so they go on for hours.
Right. Yeah.
but it's awesome. Like, so when met with like the mothers of Somali, you know, they explain that they don't necessarily need halal items. You know, they said they're fine if there's no MSG or a clean label, you know, so it gives us an idea of how can we be creative and still reach the needs of their culture, even if it is something that we're unable to purchase.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes our perceptions without reaching out can lead us down a wrong path, but reaching out to those stakeholders is absolutely crucial.
Yeah. And when we, you know, and sometimes we're surprised, like we would reach out to like the Asian community. They want to learn about other cultures because they say their kids, all they eat is Asian food at home. So at school, they want, you know, Somali dishes. They want their kids to try other type of ethnic foods. So you sometimes you hear things you don't expect.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. What would you say are some of your biggest takeaways in your almost 2 years now with Seattle Public in terms of, you know, changing your program over in these times of COVID and lessons you can learn from it as hopefully we get back to some level of traditional meal service in the upcoming school year? You know, what are some of those key takeaways that you learned through this that will help you moving forward?
Definitely have to have thick skin. I guess the biggest takeaway is, well, for me, is really learning. I learned a lot more about the city and the need and what families are looking for and what they would like to see their kids eat. It's a different culture from, you know, where I'm from. So it gave me the ability to get a better understanding of the culture of the city and the different areas. And I think during this time, it really gave us an opportunity to not just like rebrand, market ourselves and let families know that, you know, we're a support system.
Yeah.
And that, you know, reach out to us, let us know what you need and give us a week or two and we're able to accommodate you or let you know what we can and can't do. And that same philosophy carries over into the school year. So it really gave us opportunity to help build and strengthen those relationships with the community and actually showcase some of the things that we're capable of doing. And just opening up that dialogue, just keep it ongoing.
Yeah, no, it's huge. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure hearing about your district. You guys are doing incredible things out there. That partnership with Amazon's mind-blowing. Being able to switch over to scratch-based cooking in the midst of a pandemic is huge. You guys are doing great work. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you today.
Same. Hope I can do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get you back on and talk about how you've been able to apply some of those best practices and lessons from COVID when we get back to whatever normal may look like in the upcoming school year.
Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitney Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-4410 or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.